Desert Digest is back this week on a special post-hiatus episode. We'll be talking to Chef Brian Peterson of Blue Hound, downtown Phoenix, a wonderful restaurant that's produced a whole lot of talent here in the Valley. Plus, we'll get into news and notes and all the goings-on in Valley dining on Desert Digest. That was our summer hiatus, Leah.
Indeed.
I understand. I understand what that concept's all about. We were away for a few weeks. I was on vacation. Our producer, Matt, was on vacation. Leah was on vacation, managing editor at the magazine. I'm Craig Outhier, the editor. You know, summers are just kind of hard. Everyone wants to take off. And so I understand why some of my favorite restaurants are closed for a few weeks. But we're back, and we have a really great guest. This is Brian Peterson, chef at Blue Hound, which is a great restaurant downtown in the Kempton restaurant. Is it the cool place? I've always been a big admirer. It's actually been a great incubator, I guess you'd say. It's maybe not the right word for chef talent. A lot of really cool chefs have come out of there, and I actually visited the other day and had some of Brian's food, and it's fantastic. So I think that tradition is continuing. So we're going to talk to Brian soon and get into what he's doing over there and his history in the Valley here as a chef. But first, we have our news and notes section we call Tip of the Tongue. And a lot of news has happened since we last did a podcast. But we'll start with the news stuff. Bad news, Character, a restaurant on Roosevelt Row that Peter Kaspersky, who is a food legend here in the Valley. We profiled him a few months ago. He was best known for Cowboy Chow in Old Town Scottsdale, but he also did Cashmere's, the wine bar, which everyone, loved, who had good taste. He was behind Seesaw with Nobuo Fukuda, got a James Beard award there. Fukuda did, just a guy with great taste, and it was good to see him back in the game at Character, but unfortunately it closed about 10 months after it opened. Did you ever eat there, Brian?
I did not have the chance.
Me neither.
I knew many of people who worked there and purveyors, but never had the chance to get there.
Yeah. And Richie Moe, who is also a legend in the Valley in the mixology realm, he worked with Kaspersky at Cowboy Chow, and then went off and helped start Citizen Public House in Old Town, and the Gladly on Camelback was the behind the bar program there. And again, they had a cocktail bar there as well, Alias, and that closed too. So hopefully those guys, get back on their feet and find cool projects to get behind, because our food critic Nikki Buchanan reviewed Character and she thought it was great. So also more kind of bad news, the Arizona Taco Festival, which we love and has always been one of the great pillars of food festival activity here in the Valley, was going to happen in October at the Salt River Fields, but has been postponed. It looks like the manager at Salt River Fields canceled a couple of different events there, presumably because of Delta variant fears. Is that what you guys understand it to be? Can't imagine it's anything else, because people want to go to food festivals right now. So that's a bummer. But there is a taco street festival still happening. The Rockin' Taco Festival happens on September 25th in a couple weeks. That's still going on. So that's cool. It's just one of those things right now. Everyone wants to get back out there, but it's hit or miss now in terms of whether events happen, it seems like. But have you ever been to any of those, Brian? Taco Fest?
Yeah, I used to go to the festivals a lot, but then once you get intertwined in the world, it's hard to get out and about. But
right.
Taco Festival is awesome. All the culinary events are great. So, we're going to contemplate playing around in one of them. Well, this year, we'll see.
Oh, hopefully. That's great. Now, I'd heard that one of the reasons some of the festivals weren't coming back, for instance, Devour, which is the big festival in February, March, You know, it's a whole weekend, it's a whole week of events actually, but you know, the weekend, the two weekend food festivals, Saturday and Sunday, the classic Devour, always sell out. They, you know, they have them currently, or they were having them at Desert Botanical Garden. They're not doing it this year, or in 2022 rather, because right now it's restaurants are having such a hard time staffing. And according to them, you know, having the restaurants come out and bring people out to set up the food and serve the food is just too much of a strain. Is that something you've heard too, Brian, or is that consistent with your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's the definite sentiment with the restaurant industry. I mean, Devour's probably like at the top of all culinary festivals where you want to be seen. And it is a challenge, just like staffing your restaurant or hotel or whatever it might be, and to like spread yourself thin on a Saturday, Sunday is a real challenge.
Right.
And I don't think it's not changing anytime soon.
One of your predecessors at Blue Hound, who Stephen Jones, chef, he was, I think, the founding chef of Blue Hound. He of course runs Delta and the Larder down the street. Yeah. Has a great reputation. I mean, obviously a wonderful restaurant. I saw that he put a thing out on Facebook this week. He was looking for a dishwasher, signing bonus of like $950 if you stay there for a couple months. I mean, he was like, it just shows you that the personnel issue is a real thing out there right now. So
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't just relate it to the restaurant field, but for sure it is. And I mean, I just think in general, labor is hard to find in all areas, all aspects of business. And
right.
You know, dishwashers, yeah, they're a dime a dozen. And if you get a good one, yeah, they're going to get paid.
Yeah. So we'll keep our eye on that. You know, especially when the spring comes around, it's so great to have food festivals out there. It just makes, it capitalizes on the high season here and the wonderful weather. But here's some good news coming out this week. Epicenter, which is Joe Johnston's new project in Gilbert. He's kind of rewritten that town, or at least the downtown area. You know, he's behind Agritopia. He had his own restaurants there, but really just has transformed that place in such a positive way, bar none. He's merchandising or populating this Epicenter project with some really great restaurants. The current crop, or the crop he signed up, Spinato's, which is a great, you know, locally owned pizza chain. We love it in the UTA household. Belly, which is the Vietnamese restaurant on 7th Avenue in the Melrose District, doing what a lot of restaurants seem to do. They make a success of it in the downtown area, then they export the concept to Gilbert or the East Valley, and done really well. Clever Koi did that. All the Upward Projects restaurants seem to have gone out there at one point or another. So Belly's going to be out there. Buck and Rider, great LGO restaurant, very popular on the Camelback Strip, is going to have a presence now in Gilbert. Undertow, the definitive tiki bar experience in the Valley, is going to be a part of the Epicenter project. And then Matt's Big Breakfast, which is, arguably the first, craft restaurant, them and or Bianco, to really have a kind of a national profile coming out of Phoenix. So Epicenter and Gilbert's going to be a hop in place once that gets going. Any other?
Right where I live.
What's that? Is that where you live?
Yep.
And you, look, we'll get in that in a second. You have a kind of a history in the East Valley. Leah, any other news and notes from around, recently? You do a weekly column for us.
Yeah. I also wanted to add Peixoto is one I'm excited about in Epicenter. So it's not a closer drive for me, but my homegirl, Julia, love her.
You are Peixoto's, I think, the Western Hemisphere's leading advocate of that particular place. That's awesome. So I'm glad they have a caffeine presence too. They need it.
Yeah. So yes. Shout out to Peixoto, because that's where I took my wife on our first date.
No way.
Yep.
Well, you and me are going
to
be friends. You
need to know that.
Yes, I'm giving you an air hug from afar.
Usually dates start with alcohol, but I'm impressed that yours starts with caffeine.
Michael,
we start with caffeine early in the morning.
There you go. Well, let's talk about your history, Brian, because, you know, back 10 years ago or so, I remember our reviewers went out and found this place called Cork in Chandler, and it was great. Got a great review from the reviewer at the time. The thing was kind of unusual about it. It was fine dining. And, you know, at the time, the East Valley didn't have a lot of, you know, steakhouses, you know, Don Shula's, you know, 10 yard line porterhouse, whatever in Chandler, but I mean, not any chef driven, independently owned type fine dining places, which is what gets our blood going here at Phoenix Magazine. But that was helmed by you. You helmed the kitchen program there. And then Cork became Ernest, right?
Correct.
But they, you know, around what was it? When did you guys close? I forget.
You know, probably 2014 or so.
2014, right. But you had a run there and the food was great. I feel like it arrived too early in East Valley. You were telling me that, you know, the demand was kind of spotty, but now it seems like, you know, it's come around, but maybe a little. Do you think that if you had opened Cork and Ernest now, it would do better?
It might do a little better. I still think the East Valley is predominantly chain driven. There's certain pockets where, right, like downtown Gilbert, downtown Chandler, where you can be unique. But if you kind of like step outside those pockets, I still think that part of town is still driven by chains. And
right,
that's unfortunate because I live there. Me and my wife, we try to go out to eat all the time. We're like, where are we going to go? That's close. And there's nowhere close. We have to drive everywhere.
Right.
So I think one of the things we thought about when we opened Cork and Ernest and BLD was like, oh, it's great. You can come have awesome food. You don't have to drive too far. You can have a couple glasses of wine.
Right.
And not have to drive to Scottsdale and worry about the DUI laws. So
right,
we thought we were on the cusp of something great. But I just think it's a tough independent restaurant market because it's so like kid and family driven.
Yeah.
But and I still think it's that way. I hope it changes. Like, I know, like, the whole corridor on Ray and Higley that Joe Johnson's doing is awesome. He used to come into Cork all the time. I think downtown Chandler is awesome. So I'd love to see a change out there.
Yeah.
And a shift in the market. Like,
we were talking about small plates. You know, small plates to me are a godsend. You don't have to order a huge platter of something, you know. You can order a few things and get a lot of variety. But that's not the way everyone sees dining. Some people want the claim jumper experience.
Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunate. Like, if you think about it, like, whether you get a small plate or a large plate, I mean, that first bite you take or those first two bites you take are what you remember.
Right.
After you take 8 or 10 bites, you're like, it's still good, but it's like not that like great
surprise,
like presence in your mouth or whatever it might be. So
yeah,
like small plates to me are great. Like, let's have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like, when me and my wife go out, I'm like, I'll just order all appetizers. So give me the whole appetizer menu. I don't need entrees.
Right.
I don't need a 22-ounce porterhouse or whatever it might be. So
right. We see that a little bit of your menu, current menu at Blue Hound. I mean, what, you know, in terms of your Cork experience, you must have been able to, it must have been a growth experience for you in terms of your artistry as a chef. You know, like what competencies did you develop there in terms of the kinds of foods you were making and maybe you're still making?
I mean, Cork was awesome. My two partners, Robert and Neil, they were awesome. We just got to play around with the menu all the time. Like, it was never, this is our menu for the next quarter or whatever. So it's just like, have fun, play around, make your own bacon, do this, do foie gras. And I, you know, that was my dream as a chef, is like just to have a place where I can work.
Right. Do some foie gras. I was going to mention that because you do a very nice one at Blue Hound. Is that where you developed, you know, did you do your first foie there at Cork?
No, I had like foie has always been in my repertoire. Like I always loved it. I know it's an indulgent ingredient. People hate it. People, they love it. I know there's no in between, but like.
Remind me how you do it. How do you do it at Blue Hound? It's foie. And is it a, you kind of whip it with a, was it a nut?
Well, with you, we did like a foie gras mushroom pate.
Mushroom pate. It was awesome. With a carrot jelly on top.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So that was like a one-off, but like my whole thing is like always changing. Like I don't want to go to a restaurant. I know a lot of people like to go to restaurants where they know what they're going to get.
Right.
I like to go to somewhere where I don't know what I'm going to get.
Like the second or third time. The second or third time has a different,
Yeah.
I like it. I like a little happy. I like it when it's kind of 50-50, you know, there's like a few things that are dependably there seasonally, but then there's definitely new things, you know, every time you go too. Do you have a thought on that, Leah?
Intrigue me a little bit, but if I know I can come to your restaurant and get foie gras or the Brussels sprouts are awesome, or this, whatever dish that I know I love, I want that to be there. But like at the same time, I don't want to eat the same things if I go there 5, 6, 10 times a year.
Yeah, you know it. So you went from Cork and Ernest, you worked in resorts resort restaurant for a while. Which one was it?
So I was at the Arizona Biltmore at Wright's while Wright's existed. Then I left there and went back into the country club world. And that was fun and nice. And I'm back here at Blue House.
Which one did you work at? Which country club?
Terravita Golf and Country Club. So like North Scottsdale, just mile north of the Boulders Resort.
Right. Great for, from what I understand, having talked to chefs such as yourself who've worked in those environments, really predictable hours. So, you know, it's good for just kind of having work-life balance, I guess. But, you know, sometimes creatively stultifying a bit because you're, you know, the people kind of want more predictability there. Is that correct?
No, it's definitely true in the country club. They want their fun wine dinners and their special events to be cool, but like on a day-to-day basis, they want their core menu and
lobster bisque.
Yeah, you're what you would see at a normal restaurant, a burger, a club, whatever it might be, Caesar salad. So I get that too. But like at the end of the day, like for me, it's just like, I want people to come in, whether it be breakfast, lunch, or dinner, for a culinary experience, something that we make, we do in-house, we have fun with, menu changes. It might not be what you're expecting.
Yeah. Well, you were recruited to lead the kitchen at Blue Hound. And we mentioned some of the illustrious names that have been there before you. Stephen Jones is there. Sean Currid, who's currently at Maple and Ash, that, you know, very expensive steakhouse at Scottsdale. And
but you can go get the fuck it menu and have fun, right?
That's true, right? Absolutely. And then before you, is it Dushyant Singh? He was the
Dushyant.
And he was the chef. Leah, where he was a chef at a different hotel in Phoenix. What was it called?
He opened the Canby.
The Canby, that's right. And you know,
I love.
Yeah, good place. So, you know, a lot of talent there. I've always enjoyed my visits there. You did another thing on my visit recently. You brined, it's a chicken dish. It was kind of like ironically called chicken wings, but you brined a chicken for, you know, for 24 hours. Then you sous vide it and did a bunch of other, you know, black magic on it. It was awesome. Some of the most, you know, nicest chicken I've had in the valley. Have you had a sous vide habit for a while, or you know, is that something you do a lot of?
I mean, I like to use it within reason.
Yeah.
I like to say, like, our approach is kind of focused on. I always say this, like, old world techniques and new world techniques, and how can you blend them together and have fun with it, because a lot of the new technology, new ways you can manipulate food is awesome, but there's something you just can't get away from being a traditionalist. So like, how do you blend traditionalist with new world? So I think that's what kind of what we do here, and there's manipulations.
Yeah. a little bit of molecular stuff, but then also classic techniques like brining.
Yeah, like brining. Like we make all our own stocks and sauces. Our steak sauce takes 5 days to make. And like, how do you utilize the whole ingredient or the whole product? And maybe half that ingredient is manipulated into a new school way, and that other side, like you're taking the bones, you're taking this, you're taking scraps and
right.
making stocks and sauces and vinaigrettes and pastas or whatever it might be. So
give me the description of the chicken dish I had. I know you don't do it the same every time, but how might you do it? You know, walk us through that agonizing 48-hour process.
So on the menu currently, it's called the faux chicken wing, but a lot of people thought they were getting faux chicken.
Oh.
I thought the faux in quotation marks would translate to like something fun or funny.
You thought they were getting a vegetarian dish, like a green or something. Oh. Like mock chicken.
Maybe, or like F-A-U-X, like faux.
Okay.
But we're gonna put faux in quotations, like
right.
Maybe loss of translation.
Or they thought they were getting Vietnamese soup, right?
Exactly. So nonetheless, we take the chicken thigh, we brine it for 24 hours in a pink peppercorn, citrus brine. We pull it out, then we debone the chicken, another chicken. We take the skin, we hit it with meat glue or transglutamine, then we hit it with Point Reyes blue cheese in the middle, a little ranch powder, and Bliss hot sauce. And Bliss comes from Michigan. It's one of the best hot sauces out there. Stands for Because Life Is Short. It's a former chef. He created this line, and I think it's used in the Valley very little, but it should be used more. Then we wrap it and roll it in the chicken skin, and then we sous vide it for 4 hours, and then on pickup, we drop it in the fryer and do like a ranch, whipped ranch carrot puree, and a celery heart salad. So that's like a play on a chicken wing.
And it's every bit as good as that process makes it sound. I mean, you know, real nice complex dish, but not, you know, off-puttingly complex at all. So delicious. And talk to me about brining. I've tried brining at home. And what I usually get is the meat cooks too quickly. Is that true? Like when you brine it, I know it's supposed to keep the meat more moist, but I also found like it's makes it a little harder to cook with. It requires a little more skill. Is that just me imagining it and some hallucinatory kitchen fail, or, you know?
No, I mean, it might cook a little faster. I can't imagine it cooks that much faster.
Right.
But usually in the brine, we're a little heavier on the sugar to salt side. So the salt side might help the cooking process. So we're usually 2-to-1 sugar to salt.
I like that.
Whatever liquids or aromatics you might want to use. It probably gets for lack of a better word, a slight cure on it while it's sitting in that brine. So it might cook slightly faster, but at the end of the day, even if you overcook it, if it's brine, it should taste fairly well.
Yeah, but it gets dry. A little tougher, you know. I want it supple like yours, you know. But maybe the sous vide is the way to go.
And you can always buy like an Innova or a circulator for your house and just throw it in there and call it good.
I've heard of some people even just getting a cooler and putting warm water in there and then just keeping, you know, I mean, this is really low tech, keeping a thermometer in the cooler and just kind of pouring warm water in, keeping it, what is it, 110, 120? What do you want it at? Well, for chicken, you want a little higher, right? 140?
Yeah, chicken, we do like 144, 145.
You're sous vide,
even beef, you probably want like at 125. Even though it says it's not going to overcook, but like if you go too low, it's just going to be raw for a long time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you're cooking, you want a nice rare steak. You want it around 110, the middle, right? But
yeah, 110, 115. And
that's when you're grilling. You know?
Yeah. And then I've been toying with this idea of the reverse sear. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No.
So essentially you start a steak in a cold pan in a cold oven, and you bring it up slowly, and you hit it in a pan to get that nice sear on the outside.
So you
not sold yet, but playing around with the idea.
You're playing around, yeah. That requires a little testing. So it's a reverse sear. You start with a cold pan, you bring it up, and then do you sear it afterwards in a hot pan, or you just get
You sear it in a hot pan afterwards. So like you would bring it up to whatever your it's almost like sous vide, like it's gonna come up slowly in the sous vide, but like instead you just like literally throw it in an oven at a super low temp, and then when you want to hit it to your regular temp, you just call it a reverse sear, and then you salt it, hot pan, butter it, and off you go.
Oh, cool. I will Google that.
I've heard mixed reviews, so I'm still playing.
Right. You don't want to, you know, show that to the public until you get it right, but that's awesome.
But in theory, it makes sense. So.
Yeah.
Because you let the protein slowly come up, and then you hit it with a nice sear. So breaks down the fat slowly.
Kind of what you do with a sous vide, right?
Exactly.
This has been fun talking to you, Chef. And, you know, I thought my visit at Blue Hound was fantastic. I think, you know, people should definitely make it part of their dining plans this fall. And where did you start, by the way? I mean, was that your first, was Cork and... and Ernest, your first deal there, or did you, where'd you start?
No, I mean, I started in Chicago, way back when, like late 90s, and then I moved out here. And
hey, you're my age. I didn't mean to imply you started your career in the 2000s.
So, yeah, no, I mean, I've hit all the big resorts and done the independent thing, done some country club things, Printers on Prairie Row was my first real restaurant job in downtown Chicago. And that's where I fell in love with wild game and duck liver and all that fun stuff. And moved out here in 2000 and shit, like top of the rock all the way to the Boulders up north. Like I have lawns and the Biltmore and been part of all of them.
You should write a song about it. Sounds like one of those country songs where you've been trucking around.
Trucking good old time.
There you go. You like game. Is that something that'll be in on the menu at Blue Hound from time to time?
Yeah, we'll definitely fold that into the menu. I think wild game is like, to me, if I go out to eat, I want to eat something I can't eat at home or get from the grocery store. So.
Right.
Like back in 99 or 98, I was like, wow, this place does like venison, duck, antelope. That's cool. Like, cause I can't get that at the grocery store. So
true. Harder or easier to get game as a restaurateur now with the pandemic, or not affected so much?
Actually, wild game is probably out of all the proteins is probably say pretty flat. Like beef prices are through the roof, chicken's through the roof as far as a restaurant tour goes, but like wild game has always been high and it's still high, but
still high, right?
It hasn't gone up or down.
Right.
It's one of those things you deal with.
Been great talking to you. This is the time of the show where Leah talks about or brings up a interesting national food trend. We sort of see how it's playing out in the valley. What do you got, Leah?
Yeah, so home cooks like me are excited because September marks the beginning of cookbook release season. So nationally, a lot of cookbooks are being released. And I want
to know that.
Yes, they have two release seasons, spring and fall, but fall is like where the big guns come out. So these are like the highly anticipated cookbooks. And so I've already pre-ordered a lot and I'm excited to get them.
Nice.
But I wanted to highlight a local cookbook that we featured recently in my Read It column, and that is More Than a Meal, the Joy Bus community of chefs. And it's
cool.
Jennifer Caraway, who runs the Joy Bus Diner and the Joy Bus organization, where they provide meals for cancer patients. So it's a wonderful cookbook. You have a lot of good stories from people and a lot of good recipes. I've cooked a number of things from it already, and they've all been great.
She's a beloved person in the food scene here in the Valley. The restaurant's great. Are there generally items, recipes from the restaurant?
Yeah. So I love the biscuits and gravy there. And I always thought that there was cheese in the gravy because it had that kind of, that umaminess that you get from like nutritional yeast and parm. I was like, there has to be cheese in this, but I made it and no cheese, just smoked paprika, I think is the secret ingredient given it that. Cool. Mine weren't as good as hers, but I'll keep trying.
Ever contributed to a cookbook, Brian?
Not really. Just because I'm terrible at recipes.
Feel in itself, writing recipes, it's totally different.
No, I mean, I would love to like give theories and thoughts. Like in our kitchen, like it's hard to believe we don't have in any kitchen I've ran since probably leaving Lawns. I've not had a recipe for anyone anywhere. I totally empower my staff. I got theories. We have thoughts. Like we use the ingredients we have on hand and we're always like mindful of what we have. So it's just like have fun, cook, because to me coming out as a cook, like someone gave me a recipe. I'm like, that's great. It's cool. But like, I'm not going to make it like exactly the same. So it's like, great to have a guideline and they can come to me or whoever and be like, oh, this is what we're going to, I'm like, yeah, do it this way, this way, this way, this way. Make it taste good. Make it look good.
Do you like jazz? It sounds like you're playing jazz.
I love jazz.
There you go. I like to use the flavor Bible at home, to your point. If you're just going to, you know, marry flavors and, you know, explore what you have and go with your strengths, you know, for someone who doesn't have a formal training, it's, that kind of book is always really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think like, and these days with the internet, it's like, you can Google so many different recipes so easily. It's like, and you can get it from different chefs or whoever. And you're like, okay, this sounds right. This sounds wrong. How are we going to manipulate it this way? Or this is like my crazy thought. We're going to do it this way. So just let's try it. See what happens.
To me, it's all about that. Is that how you came up with the wonderful foie whipped with mushroom and the carrot jam? Cause I want to have that again. How will that be back?
The carrot jam is currently on the menu. The pate is a little special. We have been running, but like, yeah, I mean, like we have, like we do foie gras milkshakes, duck liver milkshakes, and blue cheese ice cream and popcorn ice cream. So we take the kernels and actually burn the corn kernels and then strain that off. And that's the base for like burnt popcorn ice cream.
Oh, hell yeah. Now when I visited, we had a babysitter issue. So we kind of bolted quickly and we didn't have dessert, but now that you're describing it, I think I might have to rectify the situation.
Yeah. I mean, one signature dessert going on the menu starting tomorrow, we're going to do a banana dolce milkshake with Amaro Muleta. And it's fantastic.
With an Amaro, huh? It's a like an Amaro syrup?
Yeah, the liqueur. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, that is what, those are the delights that await you at Blue Hound if you visit this fall with Brian at the helm. Thank you for coming out here and virtually and being our guest on Desert Digest, Brian.
Yeah, pleasure. Glad that you guys had me.
Yeah, you know.
Thanks for coming in and enjoying too. I'm sorry you were in such a hurry last time you were here, but next time we can just take our time.
And thanks for listening, everyone.
Yes, brief commit.
Yes, I love that.
Do it, Leah. We'll see you next week on Desert Digest.